Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
All right, and welcome to another exciting and informative edition of Atlanta Business Radio. I'm your host today, Ryan Red Hawk McPherson, and I'm absolutely thrilled to be broadcasting from the beautiful Regis Executive Suites here in sensational Sandy Springs, Georgia. As a reminder to our listeners, make sure you are connected with us on Twitter. Follow us at Business Radio X. And today we're using the hashtag Atlanta Business Radio. Also, please go like our Facebook page, Business Radio X, and interact with us there. We'd love to hear your thoughts and recommendations for future guest considerations. And now, it's my distinct pleasure to welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio and our studio, Mr. Tom Kaczmarski. How are you, sir?
Just great. Thanks, Ryan.
All right. So you're here in Atlanta, joining us on Atlanta Business Radio. What brings you to Atlanta?
Well, the purpose for coming to Atlanta is really to talk to consumers, as we have been throughout the entire country, because we're working on a project where we're trying to develop new products for skincare needs. And so the way you develop new products is by understanding what consumers' problems, issues, hassles, and needs are, and then you develop solutions to try to address those needs. And so we're back now with actual prototypes, getting their feedback and getting their input on those.
That's fascinating. And there's so many levels and layers to dissect there about what you're doing. But let's tell the listeners a little more about you before we go too far here. Tom teaches product and service innovation at Northwestern University Kellogg School of Management. He is the author of 6 books on innovation and leadership. He is also co-founder of the Chicago Innovation Awards, which recognizes the most innovative new products brought to market each year in the Chicago region. This year's winners were chosen from among 537 nominees whose innovations grossed more than $2.2 billion in revenue and created over 18,500 jobs, new jobs in the region. So quite a lot going on there. Tom, can you break it down for our listeners exactly what you do for the School of Management there?
Sure. Well, at the Kellogg School of Management, I've been teaching there. It's a good thing, Ryan, I still look so young, but I've been teaching there for 35 years, if you can believe it.
I don't believe it.
I know. I'm sure you can't. But and the courses I teach there, one is called Creating and Leading a Culture of Innovation, and the other is called Innovating New Products and Services. And these are for executives that really are looking at innovation as a core growth strategy for their company and really are looking at ways to maximize the impact of new products, new services, new businesses, new business models, new marketing programs, all of that, because all of that really counts as innovation.
It does. And innovation's a buzzword that evolves year after year after year because innovation changes. So what's new and trending and hot in your market these days?
Sure. Well, first of all, let me just share with you how I define innovation.
Please.
Because lots of times people will think immediately of Apple and Google, and then they'll say, well, I'm not Apple and Google, so therefore I can't be innovative. And that's absolutely wrong. The way I define innovation is really a think about it as any new benefit that you're delivering to an end user, a customer, or a consumer that's differentiated from competition, and at the same time is providing new value to that customer or to that consumer. So here's the distinction I make. Invention does not equal innovation. Just because you invent something or come up with a new idea or get a patent on a new invention, that doesn't convert to an innovation until you've created a product or a service from that invention that the customer or the end user really values or sees merit in and warrants and really solves a problem, issue, or need.
Very interesting. And to clarify even further, innovation doesn't always have to be tied to technology either.
Exactly right.
You said back to the Apple and the Google things.
Yeah,
innovation could be a new way to prune a tree if you can do it effectively, creatively, and bring it to market, like you said as well.
Absolutely. Over the course of the past 14 years, when I co-founded the Chicago Innovation Awards, where we give out awards each year to 20 different companies that have done some amazing new products or services. For example, one of my favorites is a very, very simple one. And this was started by a young man who went to the University of Madison and didn't like to wait in long lines for beer at the football games. So he created a product called TurboTap, And TurboTap dispenses beer in 6 seconds instead of 22 seconds. And he now has this product in about 60% of all professional stadiums throughout the U.S. and is expanding into Mexico and into Canada. But the point is that there's no technology. This is just a design where he's got the beer that flows down to the bottom of the cup and then fills up from the bottom that accelerates the speed. And lots of times, right, it's coming up with simple solutions as opposed to things that are very complex and very expensive.
Right. I think I should develop an app that tells me when the line is short and not get up from my seat in the middle of the ballgame to go get that beer. But, you know, that beer line is never short, as we know. So so innovation, that's part of what you do and what you're teaching and learning, as well as you. Where do you go to stay on the cutting edge of what's new and great out there? Is it through the awards and things like that?
See, it's actually through the things that I currently do. Because, first of all, I do a lot of consulting with companies on the topic of innovation. So I'm currently involved with the creation of other new products and services on an ongoing basis. Secondly, by being with 50 senior executives from around the world with each of my courses at the Kellogg School of Management, I hear their challenges. I hear their issues. I hear how they're either frustrated or elated over their innovation initiatives. And then I'm doing a lot of research, and that's why I'm writing books all the time on it. And lastly, the Chicago Innovation Awards. You know, last year we had 552 companies nominate for these 23 Chicago Innovation Award winners. I think it's easier these days to get into Harvard than it is to win a Chicago Innovation Award. But the real point is that we know, therefore, all of the new things that are happening in Chicago really before anybody else. So it's a combination of all that.
Right. It kind of just bubbles up organically in your world every day.
Yep.
And then people are finding out about that years later, but Tom was the man on the scene when it was first innovated, whatever it may be out there. So, and so you also do a lot of research into customer needs, right?
Yes.
And you're bringing innovative and creative thoughts along those lines. Can you talk to our listeners about that, please?
Yeah, Ryan. See, I think that's the real cornerstone for companies that are successful at innovation. It's not that eureka moment. You know, lots of times people will say, well, it's the small entrepreneur out in the garage that has a great idea and a great thought. And my strong belief, because I've seen it this way over many years, is that it's all about understanding the needs of your customer, their needs. Not that you want to develop a new product, but rather, what problem are you trying to solve? And so lots of times I'll have companies ask me, well, what does a great innovator look like? And I'll say, a great innovator is somebody that has really big ears, really big eyes, and a really tiny mouth. Because the role of a great innovator is listening and observing and doing what I call ethnographic research, which means that you're actually talking to people in their home, in their office, at the plant. You're really going out and having that dialogue with them to understand their needs in the context in which they live and work.
Yeah, customer needs, that's evolving every day. The customer and consumer is more educated these days. And the days of beating up on a customer and selling them are over. Now you need to passively approach and respectfully give your product or your service to them. And so is that some of the things you're finding as you explore some more of these customer needs here as we go forward in these 2016?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, when you take a company like Amazon, what Amazon's been able to do is provide a customized and individualized offering to all of us all the time. And they do it in a way that simplifies our life. And Amazon's never been a client of ours, but I look at the progress that companies like that have made to really make our lives easier. Of course, as Apple has and Google has and many others,
right.
but we're seeking that. And the reason why we are is because what I find to be two key trends today is, one is transparency. You can't hide stuff anymore, because with the internet and access to information that all consumers have, you can find out almost anything. And then the other trend is, I want it for me. I want it customized. I don't want just some standard generic product. I want something that really is relevant and meaningful to me. So I think those are two things that manufacturers, service providers, small companies, big companies really need to cater to.
And for those who may have just joined us, we are talking with Tom Kuzmarski. He is president and founder of Kuzmarski Innovation, a nationally recognized expert in the innovation of new products and services. And we talk about the customer needs, and that's part of the culture that's evolving out there. And that's another kind of toe in the water you have, is in the culture side of things. That's another buzzword we hear all the time here in the Business Radio X studios, but it is super important, not only to the customer, but to businesses alike. And how are you bringing some of these culture innovation to market out there?
Well, culture is really key. I've learned over the years that a company that really wants to do innovation well, or if you look at innovation best practices, you know, the really great companies will have an innovation strategy, which means they'll say, okay, let's really define what we want to do with innovation. What role do we want it to play for our company's growth? What financial goals do we have for new products, for new services? We also, they say, need a systematic process. So we need to know how to do this in a routine, systematic, and disciplined way. And the third major best practice is we need to create a risk-taking culture. And here's the biggest problem that I continue to find with, in particular, larger companies, is they have a big dose of risk aversion. Mm-hmm. And that gets embodied and embraced in employees, where they're not comfortable to step out or to really look at something that's going to be high risk, but also high return, because often there's no incentive, there's no rewards, there's no recognition for taking that big leap, because indeed you might fail. So that's why I'm a strong believer that companies need to also throw failure parties. And lots of times I'll have CEOs kind of look at me with a strange face and eyes with a furrowed brow. Why would we ever do that? And I said, because you want to send two messages. The first is we need to learn from our failures as much as we learn from our successes. But secondly, you want to communicate that we're giving people permission to fail within our organizations. Now, you want to celebrate successes big time,
of
too.
Of course, yes.
But the point is, we have to, if you're going to have innovation be a culture where people really are looking for things differently and thinking differently about the current products and services that are offered, then they need to feel as if they're safe and that senior management trusts that what they're doing will ultimately, you know, provide the best result for the company.
I'm curious about this risk. You know, that's something, human nature. Some of us are risk takers. Some of us avoid risk at all costs. But yet you're talking about a company adopting a risk strategy. You know, take those risks, be innovative and creative. Mm-hmm. But that is not human nature to some people. How do you convince them to be on board with this?
Right. Well, no, that's such a great question, Ryan, because it goes right back to figuring out with the innovation strategy, what do you want innovation to do for you? And what I find is that if you can clarify that, if what you're really looking for is to develop a totally new business or get into a totally new geography or go after a new segment of customers that you don't serve today, or to use innovation as a way to protect and defend your current business, those are all reasons that really can help to foster this risk-taking that may indeed be anti-culture. I'll never forget, though, being several years ago with a company called Blockbuster.
Yeah, I think I may have heard of them.
And Blockbuster, at least for many of us, right, was where we would go on weekends to rent our movies. But Blockbuster had three problems. Problem number one was that you had to go to the store and bring it back, go to the store, bring it back. Number two, if you brought it back late, you'd have to pay late fees. And number three, often when you would go, your movie wouldn't be in inventory. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to go and pick something else out. So what happens? Netflix comes up with a solution to those three problems. You don't have to go to the store. There's no late fees. And the inventory supply is unlimited. The market cap of Blockbuster 12 years ago was over $3 billion. The market cap 12 years ago of Netflix was $238 million. Million versus billion. The market cap today of Blockbuster is zero.
Right.
The market cap today of Netflix is over $40 billion. So it's just such a great example, right? So here I am, Blockbuster. I've got stores on every corner. I'm just everywhere, bricks and mortar. But they weren't innovating. And if you don't continue, even if when you're the leader, if you don't continue to address the needs of your customers and your consumers in a way that's differentiated from your competition, you may not survive.
No, you're right. You didn't evolve. And very similar back to your Amazon analogy a minute ago, they've evolved year after year. And look, as they continue to grow, and they don't stay static with the one product or service they offer for the folks. And another thing about innovation, it, from what I understand, it's about solutions. That's what you're doing. Innovation equals solutions.
Yes.
And when, no matter what industry you're in, whether you look with inside your organization or with inside your industry to find those innovative ideas or go outside of there, or perhaps even call upon a third-party consultant expert like yourself. Mm-hmm. What does that process look like when a company calls you? How long does it take? And what kind of programs do you put together for them?
Yeah. Well, the first type of consulting help that we provide clients is to actually develop for with them a portfolio of about 10 different new products or new services
that they would like to offer,
that they would, that we actually take to the point of business cases where they can start prototype development and actually start the development process. And that only takes about 6 months, which it sounds, at first it might sound like a long time, but I'll just tell you real quickly what we're doing in that process. The first is we're going out for a couple of months and actually doing qualitative research, talking eyeball to eyeball, to customers or to consumers. If they're a business, B2B, or if they ultimately sell to consumers, B2C, then it would be whichever one of those would be their end customer. So we're understanding their customers' needs for a couple of months. Then for another month, we're generating new solutions and new ideas to address those, followed by two more months where we're creating concepts, testing those concepts with customers or consumers, and then putting together a financial that begins to provide management with an understanding of what's the return going to be on this, and does it make sense for us now to invest the dollars to actually develop the prototypes and perhaps make it or provide a service for it. So it's actually a way to get innovation accelerated within a company.
And it sounds very much like a calculated timeline, a procedure and a process with the strategy behind it. Yep. It may be, you know, seem long, like you said, to some folks, but in the end, you will get some real data on where to go with these new products or new innovation you may want to be adopting.
Well said. You want to come work with us?
I like my radio job. I'll stay here, though. But I'm very intrigued by what you're doing, and I know our listeners are as well. You're also the founder, along with journalist Dan Miller, of the Chicago Innovation Awards. It's been around about 14 years now. So what has that experience been like for you?
Oh, it's been absolutely sensational. And let me just tell you a couple of the reasons why.
Yes, please do.
14 years ago, Dan Miller and I said, let's give this a try. And we had 75 people come. And what we noticed in the room was a real level of excitement. And we said, well, let's do this again. And so the next year we did it, and we had 165 people come. Last month or two months ago in October at the Harris Theater in Chicago, we had 1,500 people come. Mm. So it's significantly grown. But what we also have done over this time period is we now have about one event every month where we'll bring together innovators from big companies and small companies. And so the first thing that I've just been so excited about is the ability for us to recognize innovation that cuts across all types of companies, high tech, low tech, no tech, big companies, small companies, startups, and importantly, nonprofits as well as profits. And so by doing that, we've created now a community of innovators in Chicago. We now have 22,000 people in our database that comes to our events. Last year, we had over 7,000 people actually attend our events over the course of the year. So the beauty of that is it then also fosters more entrepreneurship. It inspires people to take their ideas and actually bring them to market. And lastly, is what I've seen is Chicago as a city has really embraced this and come together. And so it's been so fulfilling for those reasons.
If listeners wanted to find out when the next event would be or stay connected with you, how would they do so?
Absolutely. Just go to www.chicagoinnovationawards.com. And on that website, we'll list everything. But you know, Ryan, at some point, I think And believe strongly that there should be an Atlanta Innovation Awards.
I was just thinking the same thing. And Business Radio X should be there to broadcast live.
Exactly right. And be one of the media partners.
That's right. And highlight some of those great innovators who are changing the culture of the city.
That's right.
Behind innovation. So, but that's fantastic. You said you just had the 2015 ones back in October, and you give those awards away, starting to ramp up for next year. So encourage listeners to go to the website and get involved. And if you do want to bring it to your city, reach out to Tom. And he may be able to make that happen, and we can certainly go from there. So so that's good. And so now you're here in Atlanta, like you said, doing some customer research, doing some real ground, kind of grunt work, getting that done. I'd love to get your thoughts on Atlanta and the business community and the business culture here. And what are your thoughts there?
Well, I've always loved Atlanta because every time I'm here, I always feel like I'm with gentlemen and ladies. And it's a, I think it's a culture where we still understand the value of courtesy and manners down here. So I happen to think there's some great value in that.
Chivalry is not dead in my family. I can attest to that.
That's right. That's right. But I also think there's a real commitment, and you've got some great companies here, Coca-Cola. I mean, lots of companies that are doing some great things, and have. I think what I'd like to see actually in Atlanta is a greater focus on entrepreneurship, to be able to really recognize the value of encouraging and building an ecosystem here that would foster more support for small startups with more venture capital, with more banks, with more financing, with more marketing efforts that really could create. You know, in Chicago, we started 4 years ago something called 1871. And 1871 is a 50,000 square foot space in the Merchandise Mart that now houses 250 small entrepreneurs. But what's so unique about it, I should tell you about the reason it's called 1871. That was when the year Chicago burned down.
I was going to say the big fire.
That's right, the big fire. And so 1871 symbolizes the rebirth of entrepreneurship in Chicago. And it's been so wonderful to see this because we didn't just provide an office space for entrepreneurs. We put in this space universities, venture capital firms, banks, marketing people to be able to provide that level of support that's so important for entrepreneurial growth.
Oh, that's great. It incubator of types to foster some of this growth. And as you mentioned that, you know, innovation and culture, I mean, they really seem to be going hand in hand. More I talk with you about it, that you can't have one without the other almost.
Exactly.
And to have, if you can have a rich, innovative culture, people will just will follow along and be much more enthused as to do so. So we're getting a sense of that there too. So and so Mr. Kuzmarski is also the author of 6 books on innovation and leadership. You can go on Amazon, I'm sure, to find those. Is that right?
Yes, you can.
You could?
Yes.
I will try to read all the names off to you there, but some of them include Innovating Chicago Style, and the how local innovators are building the national economy, and that was co-written as well. So we encourage our listeners to go onto Amazon and Google's name. That's I spell Kuczmarski. He's also been featured on many radio, television, and national periodicals, including the Wall Street Journal, Fortune Magazine, Newsweek, so on and so forth. And you can add Business Radio X and Atlanta Business Radio to that list now. So looking forward to 2016. Now, what are some of the things on your radar that you, places or events that you're getting excited about?
Oh, there's so many things. I'll share 3 with you. In May, I also teach at the University of Sassine in Bangkok, Thailand.
Interesting.
And I'll be there speaking to the university, teaching there, but also to a YPO group in Bangkok and another large company, PTT. The thing I find so fascinating about Thailand is that people have such respect for individuals. There's just such a great deal of emphasis that's placed on personal respect. And I love that attribute. So I love going there.
So you'll be in Thailand in May.
I'll be in Thailand in May. The second is I have 2 new books that will be coming out next year. One is called Praise, The Power of Recognition. And this really, we've interviewed 50 executives so far and have really understood the role that praise plays in building a culture and what they do right and what they do wrong. And then the second book is called Lighting the Fire. And that book is all about how to create a culture of innovation.
Oh, interesting. Yep. And you said, and a yeah, third
and then,
one?
And then the third is the October Chicago Innovation Awards event, which will be, I think, even bigger and better than ever before.
I'm sure it will. And I look forward to many great things and stories coming from you in the books. I'm curious, what's the writing process like for you? When you got an idea for a new book, how do you sit down and get that book into paper?
It is a grueling process. I love people that haven't written books. They go like, oh, isn't it so creative?
Right.
Isn't it so fun? And it's like, oh my gosh, because you have to write and rewrite and rewrite.
Yes.
Many, many times. And that's really the art of writing. It's
okay.
Not about getting it down correctly the first time.
Yeah.
It's about being able to edit and edit and edit. And then ultimately you'll get something that's
good. Now, we've interviewed many authors here in the studio, and some of them lock themselves in a hotel room for 30 days until it's done. Some of them do a little bit each morning before they go to work. And so it's just always interesting to me to find out what is the writing process for some folks. Some folks find it very liberating and absolutely a therapy for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe one of these days I'll sit down and write my memoirs.
Good.
But I've got to figure out what's the best way to do that. So, and so when you're not changing the world of innovation, and you're not traveling the world and visiting and teaching at colleges, what do you like to do in your off time to stay motivated and to stay focused on and ever forward?
Well, I've been married now for 39 years
to
the same woman. And she's
congratulations to her.
That's right, to her. That's for sure.
She's a lucky woman.
No, because we're still best friends. And I have three boys. One is a writer. One is a medical student at Dartmouth Medical School. And the third works at Google out in Palo Alto. And then I love to garden too.
Okay.
So I like to see things grow.
So you can see Tom with his family or in the garden or just relaxing on the weekend when he's not out there changing the world and bringing new culture to your company and your city. But if listeners want to find out more information about you, your books, your services, or where they can see you, how would they do so?
www.kuczmarski.com, KUCZMARSKI.
Yes. So make sure you look him up out there and get in touch with him. If you have questions, maybe he'll come speak at your college or come to your company and put some new culture in place. So we look forward to that. So thank you so much for sharing all your insightful industry knowledge with us here today on Atlanta's Business Radio. Next time you're back in Atlanta and we got some time, please come on back to the show. We'd love to get updated on what you're doing, especially with your new book
coming out
next 2016. All right. Thank you. And thank you to our listeners for supporting us. Remember to follow us on Twitter at Business Radio X and use the hashtag Atlanta Business Radio. So if you're out there doing something interesting to genuinely serve your market, your community, and your profession, reach out to us directly on the contact page of the website, businessradiox.com. Thank you to Stone Payton and Lee Cantor. And on behalf of the entire Business Radio X network, I'm Ryan Redhawk McPherson. We will see you on the radio.